Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Marian Bartoli.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Matt Yoder from Hartville, Ohio, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So a big thank you to Matt Yoder from Ohio, our Kickstarter backer who has been one of our introductory backers here on the Tennis Podcast for 2020. Matt Yoder. Yeah, we need a Star Wars character at a time like this, feels to me. And Catherine Whittaker is our faithful Jedi in Putney. And Matt Roberts is in the South somewhere. None of us are in the same room for obvious reasons. And
you've just made an already incredibly partridge situation, David, even more partridge.
Splendid. So thank you, Matt.
Splendid it was.
Well, we need Star Wars characters and Matts.
Yes, we do. So thank you, Yoda, for introducing this edition of the Tennis Podcast. Look, yeah, we're probably still going to make some silly jokes like that, at least I am, because I don't really know how else to behave at the best of times, let alone when we are all facing a global pandemic, as we are right at the moment. But what you can be assured of is that your tennis podcast... Oh, I've just knocked the phone over. That your tennis podcast is here.
Armageddon just hit our recording.
FaceTime.
David just went black.
Yes, but I should say my first beer of the day is an Irish stout.
Suitably dark.
Yes, and therefore I can't be completely held responsible for the content of this podcast. But yeah, we're going to cover plenty of serious stuff as well, but we're also going to do what we normally do, like I've just knocked the phone over and et cetera. But when we were with you last week, we were talking, I think it was, what was it? Was it the morning or the day of Indian Wells being cancelled? That feels like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It is extraordinary how quickly new normals emerge in times like this. Yeah, it was a week ago that it was absolutely shocking and seismic and unthinkable that an event as large as Indian Wells had been cancelled seemingly out of the blue. And within 24 hours... I and a lot of other people were up in arms about the fact that Miami hadn't been instantly cancelled and lots of other events hadn't been cancelled. And 2 days later, I was watching the Cheltenham Festival racing event happening on my TV thinking it is preposterous that this is going ahead. And now, 7 days later, it feels completely normal that pretty much any social engagement outside of the home is unthinkable. Let alone anything involving mass gatherings. Yeah, it's the pace of change and adjustment is something I've never experienced before in my lifetime.
Indian Wells was the first domino to fall, really, wasn't it? And then since then, every sporting event in the world has just gone before our eyes, really. And now you're thinking, as you said, Catherine, at the time we were thinking, was it the right decision to cancel Indian Wells? Now you're thinking, well, what on earth would have happened if they hadn't cancelled it? I mean, they would have probably got to about day one, day two, and had to stop it halfway through the thing, like the events that were going on that week had to be stopped immediately when the ATP came out with their 6-week suspension. It was it was really extraordinary how quickly everything changed in a week.
It does look impressively prescient, doesn't it? The decision made by Indian Wells. I think there was a bit of reception in various quarters at the time that they had jumped the gun, perhaps, that the tournament had jumped the gun. And maybe they had, but as discussed on last week's podcast, there's every reason to be overly cautious and to jump the gun. I mean, in terms of response to what's going on, jumping the gun and trying to get ahead of the curve seems to have been the best response that anybody has been able to have to it. So I think that decision by Larry Ellison and Tommy Haas and that tournament will stand in time as a very good one and a very prescient one.
Yeah. Since then, to bring you up to date, if you haven't followed all of it, it was pretty soon afterwards that the ATP announced a 6-week suspension of the entire ATP circuit, meaning that Miami wouldn't happen. That was initially announced by Dade County, the wider county of Florida.
If that does change, my bag is still packed and ready to go. So
yeah, we know that. I mean, everybody's been following that on social media. That's all we've been paying any attention to on the Tennis Podcast feed.
It's all we've got.
Yeah, it's all we got. So don't quite know how we're going to fill the other remaining 48 minutes.
I'm having to string out the unpacking saga for as long as I can. I mean, I'm quite happy to do that.
Don't worry, folks. We've got ideas. And we've got guests as well. We've got guests today. They're coming in a minute.
Who needs ideas when you've got the saga of when I will unpack my one remaining suitcase?
Yeah, but I'm telling you, folks, we've got proper tennis players coming up on the Tennis Podcast in a matter of seconds. So
David's not convinced by the longevity of the
hang in there. Anyway, so 6-week suspension.
Hang in there for better content.
For real tennis.
The new strapline of the Tennis Podcast.
Hang in there. Come for the real players and get through the other bit at the start. So we had the 6-week suspension announced. That means no Miami, no Charleston on the WTA side. But this was initially the ATP announced on their own unilaterally that they were cancelling Miami, Monte Carlo was going to go, and everything basically up until the end of April. And bit by bit, the WTA came pretty much to the same conclusion, but they tried to do it one at a time rather than just doing a complete block of cancelling everything. That's where we stand at the moment. We have had another update today with the WTA saying that because of the ongoing global current coronavirus outbreak, the WTA tournaments in Stuttgart, Istanbul and Prague in April are going to be cancelled as well. And so everything is suspended on the WTA tour now until May the 2nd. They say we will make a decision in the week ahead regarding the remaining WTA European clay court tournaments and monitor the situation closely. So it may not be the end of the cancellations even now. So here we are in mid-March. We know we're not going to get any tennis on the women's side until May the 2nd. So let's talk to a couple of the players who were out in Indian Wells who were affected by this situation, starting with the British number one on the men's side, Dan Evans, world number 28, career high ranking of 28. I had a little chat with him before he went to Indian Wells initially when he was still in Dubai, and I sensed then that he was pretty anxious about the whole situation, the fact that he was going to go back to the UK just for a couple of days, then fly out to California. He really didn't know what to expect when he got there. So I asked him, first of all, what it was like when he got to Indian Wells.
Well, nothing was any different at the start. I actually went to San Diego for 2 days, and a few members at the club had actually said to me, "Oh yeah, we're not going down to Indian Wells this year because of the coronavirus." And I mean, I was like, "All right." I guess, you know, they were older members and two English guys, so I was just like, they must be taking precautions. And we got down there, and as I'm sure you know, the tennis players are not the most, you know, they're pretty isolated in their own world, and no one really said much until I think it was pretty much the day before qualifying started. There was murmurs that it was going to get called off, and then big rumours sort of started, and then it got called off. But the day before, I'd listened to the health minister of, I think it was California or Coachella Valley, and he said that he made a statement about Indian Wells that he would be the only guy who would be calling it off. So then when it sort of happened, it was all very, you know, a bit of a surprise really. But then a day after that, it wasn't so much a surprise, if that makes sense. You know, yeah. It was all the severity of it really kicked in. And then not long after come the Miami cancellation, when it was, you know, a pandemic.
Mm. What's the week been like since then? Because they were letting everybody stay, weren't they, and use Indian Wells for a few days and stay in the accommodation. What did you do and what was it like? I mean, being around the other players at that sort of time.
Yeah, I mean, we stayed, like, there was a few different people did different things, and then, you know, we was advised to not leave the country because we might not be able to get back in, and then that seemed like it was defeating the object of, if people couldn't come in, then there wouldn't be a Miami really. And then, yeah, it was all pretty strange. You know, I didn't like practicing when at the place we were supposed to be playing. It seemed, you know, pretty no atmosphere. There was nothing. It was a terrible sort of place to be, to be honest. And I found it pretty hard and not easy to be motivated. But everyone was practicing, which was the strange thing. You know, everyone was practicing, everyone was eating together. So it was all a bit surreal at Indian Wells. And then, as I just said, when we heard WHO called it a pandemic, I think everybody was booking flights. Then I think, you know, the writing was on the wall for Miami.
Mm. And obviously they've called on the ATP side, they pretty much immediately called a 6-week halt to the tour. Now, that's a pretty far-reaching impact for so many people. I mean, even in our little ecosystem of tennis,
yeah.
You've had a good start to the year. You had a good last year, so you'll have built up some finance that you can weather a period like that. But not everybody's in that boat, I would imagine.
No, you know, I guess not. But there's not much anyone can really do, is there, right now? It's a terrible situation for everybody, you know, and thankfully no one just yet has tested positive in tennis. Well, not as far as I know. And that's the main thing, is to keep everybody healthy. And I think that's, you know, the reason why the tournaments have been cancelled and the 6-week pause to all the tournaments. You know, it's obviously a difficult time for everybody involved, like you just said. It's, you know, even down to, you know, people working at the tournaments. I actually spoke to an umpire who was on my flight, and he wasn't sure if he was getting paid or not, you know, which is, at the end of the day, that's what everybody wants to happen, is they go to work to get paid because they have stuff to pay for in their livelihood, you know. And, you know, that mustn't be a good feeling for anyone to not know if you're going to get paid. And that, you know, that obviously counts for everybody right now in Great Britain and the world.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously had a period of time out the game. We know the reasons for it. I remember you talking about at the time that you found it quite hard, sort of just not having the purpose in a way. Is that something that you feel might that help you in a way, that you've at least had experience of that?
Well, if we're able to practice, if we're able to practice and stuff, I don't see the 6 weeks being that much of an issue for me personally. You know, that can't change. So, but you know, if we went, there's obviously talk of the country going on to a lockdown, like Spain. I think that changes quite a lot for everybody, really. That's literally doing nothing, isn't it? So I think that'll be pretty tough. I actually know one guy who's in Madrid, and they're on a lockdown. They can't leave, and you know, he said it's, you know, not good at all. So I'm hoping that that doesn't happen. But if it does, then, you know, it'd be interesting to see how that works out for the tennis players.
So that's Dan Evans. And I put a similar question to Bethany Mattek-Sands, who's won 9 Grand Slam doubles and mixed doubles titles in her career. She felt that her injury layoffs over the years would help with the adjustment of so much off time, and that other players would find a way through it as well.
I'm going to give some tennis players the credit that we're all pretty mentally strong, and we can figure things out. And we've done this probably, you know, since we've been juniors playing. But, you know, I think for the most part, everyone's going to keep training. I mean, I'm back home here in Phoenix. I'm able to practice as the courts next to me are still open. And I actually have a gym set up in my garage. So I'm doing garage workouts, which I'm about to start posting their Instagramming live because there's not much else going on. but it's, you know, it's crazy. Like, there's no live sports right now. There's no, you know, there's people are sitting at home and, you know, they're watching Netflix or reruns. I mean, there's only so much news I know I personally can watch. And then I'm like, I gotta, you know, have a little bit more positivity in my day and, you know, still be constructive. I think, you know, for me personally, prioritizing my day with things to do is still important. Like having that routine, even though it's not my normal routine, it's making a slightly different routine that I can stick to, during my day helps keep me inspired and motivated, and just not, you know, finding myself wondering why or, you know, worrying about the future too much, because there's just a ton we can't control right now. Like majority of it we can't control. And I think that's where, you know, I'm challenging myself to sort of let go of what I can't control. And here's what I can control. And that's, you know, for me personally, reducing a little bit of the anxiousness and negativity.
I mean, you've had a great career already and have earned some good prize money along the way in a long career. Not everybody is in that position on the tennis circuit. Do you sense people, the players that you know, maybe that haven't had such an amount of success, are worried?
I think so. I think, again, I'm gonna lump, you know, some other people in different careers, you know, across the board that, you know, let's say you are living paycheck to paycheck or week to week, there is going to be some concern on, you know, what are you going to do? And that's a massive one. And I think players do fall in that boat where it's, some of them really can't afford to take 6 weeks off. I mean, you know, the good thing about it is you're not incurring extra expenses, you know, like for traveling and things like that. But for most players, we're still, let's even say you still have a coach or you still have a trainer. I mean, we still have regular bills. We still have houses and apartments and phone bills. And of course, Netflix, you can't stop the Netflix now either. Like I think there's definitely a lot of players that fall in this boat. And they're the ones that are, I think, you know, a little bit more stressed, and as they can be, it's, you know, it's, we got to sort of come together as not just as, you know, the world in general and each country, but even the tours come together and sort of figure some other options out, see what we can do to work together, even with tournaments, with the tour, with sponsors. You know, there has to be something, you know, eventually we'll all, I mean, I'm looking at it positively, but eventually we'll all get back into a normal routine and start playing again, start these tournaments. But, you know, I think it's worth sort of meeting and figuring out what we can do in the interim. And I think that would be really helpful, especially for players that are sort of falling in that category of not sure how they're going to go too long without making money.
It's very difficult, isn't it, for the tours and the tournaments? I mean, this is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this. How have you found the decision making and the communication lines so far?
Hey, I think that's a challenging question because, you know, on one side you would like to say, we wish we could have known about some things earlier. Let's say even Indian Wells. I mean, you have players that are, you know, getting ready to play in 12 hours, and could they have told us earlier? Did they know sort of all this information earlier? But like you said, this is sort of unprecedented, and it's really, you know, everyone is sort of trying to get the best info, the most current info, and what, you know, you got to weed through, like, what's exaggerated, what's not exaggerated, like, where do we got to fall, and we got to let everyone know things. And I think once BMP did get canceled, I think we were on a pretty good communication as far as, at least for the women's tour. I know the ATP, the guys were in touch with their player board reps. All the players have been in touch with our player reps. So I think once we kind of knew, like, once BMP canceled, that was sort of the trickle down effect. Like, we, Miami, you know, wasn't sure, but it, you know, I was looking for a situation where we didn't wait till the day before Miami. Everyone flew to Miami and then waited for that to happen and then canceled it in another 12 hours before we played. So I think once, you know, the initial sort of confusion before was BMP getting canceled or not canceled was probably the only time where everyone felt like they were, it was a little bit, you know, they hadn't, there wasn't a lot of good communication. After that, I think it's definitely gotten better. Like, we have open communication with the tour. There's a separate email if we have questions about whether it's points, whether it's prize money, whether it's rankings, you know, we've been getting communication within 24 hours, sometimes within an hour, on big questions that we all have. And I think that's been really helpful for us. But the main thing was, I think everyone was really trying to figure out where they wanted to be before all these travel bans came into play. I mean, that was a big question. We're just, tennis is an international sport. There's only a couple that have, that live in the U.S. and maybe there's a couple of foreigners that have places in the U.S. But for the most part, I think everyone sort of wanted to get home and get situated and be ready for sort of what was going to happen next.
Yeah. And of course, we don't know from here what will happen next, other than that tennis is not going to be played for the next 5-6 weeks. Have you been told anything beyond that at this stage?
I have not been told anything. As of right now, I know some of the clay court, the European clay court events did cancel themselves. I don't know that. I know the ATP made an official statement. Yeah. I'm not sure if the WTA has officially, officially said?
I think the ATP did the blanket 6 weeks, and the WTA has done it a little bit more gradually and tried to take it a bit more case by case. But pretty much until the end of April. So it's more or less in line now. I guess it'll be revised and considered again as we go along.
Yeah. So that's everything that I have heard. You know, right now, I think the big questions are, I mean, you think of something that's coming up later in the year, like Olympics, you know, for tennis, you know, for some sports, they've already selected their athletes. They know they're going. For tennis, we take points up until French Open. So, you know, a big question is, or even Wimbledon, actually, I'm sorry. And it's like, you know, where does that fall? Like, if you were defending points from last year, if, you know, you're not, like, these are all the questions I think that the tour is more concerned about right now versus even trying to figure out, hey, in 7 weeks, I think we'll be able to put a play on it. Just because, you know, this has never happened on this big of a scale. I mean, again, we've had tournaments canceled maybe here and there, but we've usually figured out there's been another one that week, something to that effect, never anything like this. So no. I think, you know, I think everyone's in a holding position. You know, I'm communicating directly with Steve and the rest of the player board and, you know, just giving my, you know, giving my opinions and thoughts. But, you know, until then, there's just really, they got to sift through a lot of information. I'll let them handle that.
Yeah, no, understandable. Well, Bethany, thank you so much for giving us an insight into your world at the moment. And I hope it's a world that for everybody involved in tennis and everyone involved around the world, that it improves, and wish you all the very best.
Definitely. And if something changes in the next few weeks, we can jump on a call again and I'll let you know. I'll give you the update.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Dave.
So Dan Evans and Bethany Mattock-Sands, two players who've been right at the heart of things on the main circuit. I mean, I think at some point we'd love to speak to some players further down the rankings who are really affected financially and get an insight for what they're going through. Because we know so many people. I mean, both of them mentioned in the course of the interviews that I did with them the number of people that are affected, the ordinary person in the street who might be a volunteer or might just work a tournament one at a time, that we know so many media colleagues who work on a freelance basis, and frankly we're all freelance. We have had a lot going on over the years and have been able to build some business, but I mean it does affect everybody. And Evans there referencing umpires who go week to week. There's just so many people. Very interesting to hear their views. And then things have moved on again, because there they are both talking about trying to get back into preparation for returning to the tour. Catherine, Dan Evans was saying that he was planning to meet Mark Hilton, his coach, up in Birmingham tomorrow. He's staying down in Cheltenham at the moment, is Evans, where he's based with his girlfriend, and Hilton coming down from Nottingham. And now where do they stand, given that the British government has just announced that no non-essential contact should be made socially between people? Does that mean he can? Does that mean he can't? It's so difficult for everybody, and including tennis players right now.
Yeah, I mean that in every country, the advice is different, right? I think in this country, there's quite a lot of feeling that too much is being left open to interpretation. I think people are just grasping for certainty, right? Tell me what I can and can't do. Tell me what's okay. And obviously the situation of tennis players and indeed people like us, you know, we work in a pretty unorthodox industry. There's no kind of, there's no legislating really. It's all pretty unique issues and situations that we're all faced with. And we're having to figure out and navigate the uncertainty as we go. And there are no clear-cut answers, and it's all just so, so discombobulating. And I guess a lot of people have this image in their mind of, you know, any top athlete, you know, they've got a gym in their house and they've got a tennis court in their back garden and they've got anyone they need on call and all the rest of it. Well, I'm not saying get the violins out for him, but Dan Evans is a top 30 tennis player, and he is going to be facing, you know, very real impediments to continuing his training by the sounds of things, let alone people in Italy. I mean, I'd love to, if there's any tennis players based in Italy or Spain for that matter listening that would be up for talking to us, then please get in touch, because I would really love to hear about what's going on there. I mean, I think part of one of the very particular aspects of what's going on is that it's we hear sort of the facts of what's going on the ground. It's very difficult to get the actual inside feel of it because we're all supposed to be keeping a distance from one another. I saw a report on the news earlier where the reporter was interviewing a couple along Brighton Beach and she said, "Don't worry, we came prepared for this," and she got out this extra long microphone extension stick. It was like a selfie stick but 2.5 meters long. And she did this interview 2.5 meters away with this long stick. And then she did this piece to camera where she was obviously standing about 5 meters away from the cameraman and she was really out of focus. And it just looked completely bizarre. But yeah, I mean, nobody can get into the hospitals, into the flats where elderly people are in self-isolation and all of that. We know the facts of it, but actually viscerally feeling it is really, really difficult, isn't it? So I'd love to hear about it as much as possible. But we are trying. But it's hard to get to people at the moment because this is a situation whereby the measures being taken involve us all isolating from one another, and that makes so many things so difficult.
And I think what this whole situation has reinforced in my mind is that when we occasionally get messages from people telling us to stick to tennis, when we, you know, doing slams, if some sort of controversy comes up, maybe we dwell on that more than the tennis on certain days. Well, I think this whole crisis has just shown how tied up tennis is with the real world, really, whether it be social issues or climate issues or political issues. Well, this is a massive health issue which is impacting tennis, and we're going to look at it through a tennis perspective, and it's so intertwined. You just, you know, I think it's something going forward where, you know, when tennis does come back, we will, you know, we won't ever take it for granted. You know, we will always keep it in mind with everything that's going on in the real world, as tennis players have to in this situation. And the other thing that struck me hearing Matic Sands talking and Dan Evans about how they just wanted to get home, which is such an unusual feeling for a tennis player, I think, as much as anything. They're so used to being on the road. It happens all the time. They spend so little time at home, tennis players. And indeed, they, you know, they have a whole team of people around them doing things for them. You know, to get to the top of the sport, you have to be quite selfish, really, with your time, your effort, your focus. All their team are built to get them in the best shape possible, get them to the top on the road 52 weeks of the year, pretty much. But now tennis players are realizing that they're not the center of attention in their families, and they just want to get back home. They just want to help out when they can. And that must be a very confusing and different experience for all the tennis players as well.
Yeah, and I touched on it with both of them about the mental health elements of it, and I think it's the same for everybody who is forced to isolate, who's forced to stop what they're doing to work from home. I mean, I've worked from home for many years, but it's not everybody who finds that easy. And look, we're very much the lucky ones in so many respects. We understand the struggles that many people are going to have over the next few months, and if you're one of them, really my thoughts are with you. We want to provide a bit of entertainment as well as information about tennis and conversation as we can. We're not going to stop. We're going to carry on. That's what we're doing right now, and that's what we intend to continue doing. But in terms of the wider future, that, as Dan Evans said it later on to me, that there's just so much unknown right now. Nobody knows what's going to happen next. I really do feel for the authorities involved in all sports right now. Evans said he felt that the ATP had handled things well in communicating to the players what was going on as best they could with such a changing scene. But where next? Because we know we've got no international tennis until the end of April at the very earliest, May the 2nd on the women's side. It means such a lot for the business, for all those tournaments, for the tours, for all the TV deals, for everybody who works in the sport who frankly relies on it for their income. And yeah, I feel for all these people that are posting information. I saw one of our colleagues in the photography world, Ella Ling, was decided to open up her entire library to try to sell images. Now she's got an incredible library of images from 15 years covering the sport, but this is suddenly what she is faced with because she can no longer travel the world and supply imagery to magazines and publications and websites that might want to buy them. So everybody's got to try to find another way of going about earning a living, or at least bridging the gap until they can get back out there again. But for the players, they don't have an off season normally that's very long. And suddenly they could be faced with I don't know how long. It could be months. It's going to be a very interesting process for them to actually become tennis players again, I would imagine, whenever it happens.
Yeah, it's the proper tennis off season we've all been calling for.
It's not the one we've been calling for.
Is that the message, the learning to be done here? It's always got to learn the hard way.
And these footballers wanted a mid-season break.
Yeah.
Nobody meant that.
I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it? Because at the moment we have this kind of, we have this known definitive six-week period of no tennis, but we're all kind of reluctant to really talk about it definitively in those terms because we all fear and possibly even suspect that it will end up being longer than that. But let's just for a moment, thought experiment wise, say it is a 6 week break, and come the start of May and Madrid week, tennis is happening again, whether it's behind closed doors or not. Let's say that the facts we have them as we have them at the moment bear out, and the tennis season carries on start of May, and they've had this 6 week break. It makes things very interesting, extremely interesting.
Yeah, in terms of who comes out of the blocks and who, I mean, we may get the most, when they eventually do start playing again, we may get the most incredible level of play.
Yeah.
If everybody's suddenly fully fit and fresh and all those niggles have gone.
And an opportunity to potentially work on their game in these 6 weeks, which they don't really get over the off season. It will help players who are currently, you know, a very small group of players who are currently injured. This is going to benefit. It gives them more time to get back. Just thinking out loud, someone like Kei Nishikori.
Yeah, he has this every season.
Yeah. And also,
this is,
I mean,
just a normal season for him. Couple of months out on the sidelines.
Bianca Andreescu, and we obviously talk about Federer, but finally we might get Andreescu at a base point where she's just fully fit.
She was watching herself. Did you see that? She did an Instagram post where she was watching her match from the US Open, I think against Mertens. And she just put at the bottom some text about this is the closest she's getting to tennis for a long time.
I love that she's literally checking herself out. She's literally saying, check me out. Everyone else is posting all these Instagram videos about what they're doing in their time off, and she's literally just going, "I'm checking myself out."
Brilliant!
And we've had
Stan Wawrinka is making a fondue at home.
He's being trolled by Andy Murray. Yeah.
Yes, for his hair,
bad hair.
Everything about Stan Wawrinka's social media presence is lols, I find.
But really, is Andy Murray in any position to talk about somebody else's hair?
No.
Who am I?
my brother sent me a message earlier saying, question for the podcast, sweepstake on how many balding tennis players are going to come back with full heads of hair after this break. You said we were looking for conversation topics. Well,
but without a miracle
asketh
cure.
And you shall receive.
Right. Jamie Murray's been at home playing Monopoly. He vows to master it over the coming weeks. Andrea Petkovic has started a book club, which sounds like a very good idea. Stefanos Tsitsipas posted, got stopped by a guy while walking in the streets of New York City who knew my grandfather from his football days. Such a small world.
Which is like the opposite of self-isolating, isn't it?
I mean, I should say that Stefanos posted this 1 or 2 days ago, and let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say that maybe America hadn't closed down at that point. But it is just classic Tsitsipas.
Posted something about you can't do extraordinary things with basic people or something. You can't do epic things with basic people.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
And then true story, Steph, but just basic not in keeping with the times.
I was about to check my phone to see what you're referring to, and then I realised I'm talking to you on it, and I can't. But anyway.
And you're a terrible multitasker.
I'm not the best at the old multitasking.
Have you seen what Alex de Minaur's done?
No.
Is it a moustache?
No, he's created a TikTok account, and I'm wondering whether David knows what one of those is.
No, what's that?
You've got young kids, David. You should know.
They
talked.
They mentioned it to me. Oh, that's true. They said that somebody at school had got one, and they weren't supposed to have one because they're not allowed to have one. They told me they're not allowed to have one. It's not a rule I've given them because I don't know what it is.
They set themselves rules.
Well, I think their mother has been involved somewhere along the line. So what is a TikTok account?
It's a growing social media platform for like videos, basically. It seems to have, I don't know whether it's replaced Vine. I think it might have done, kind of.
Oh, do you remember Vine? That was good for about 4 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
the videos are like 5 seconds long.
And
7.
Oh.
Well, these ones tend to be quite short, and Coco Gauff's pretty big on it, and there's lots of people do dance routines, and Alex de Minaur seems to be going down
it's
that
right route. Up your alley,
yeah,
David.
David's looking confused.
Are you proposing
by it?
That we have a tennis podcast TikTok account?
I'm just saying that we might get desperate.
I mean, I can't keep up with all this stuff. I'm doing an Ask Me Anything on Wednesday on Reddit.
8 o'clock.
We might
UK
already
time.
Have asked you everything by that point.
I mean, when I proposed that date, I thought, I didn't think all this stuff would have been happening. What am I going to talk about? Oh, social isolation.
The past. What talk about the past. Ask David about the past.
Yeah.
David talks about the 90s.
We're going to be doing a lot of nostalgia on the tennis podcast over the next few months, I can tell
Dogs
you.
Dogs and nostalgia. I really wish we'd called it back 8 years ago when we were starting this thing, the tennis and miscellaneous other stuff podcast.
Yes. who would you, if you had to, let's say you got caught out and you happened to be at a tennis tournament when all the restrictions came in and you happened to be in a room with a tennis player who you then had to sort of isolate with for
who do I want to self-isolate with?
Who'd you go for?
And who do I want to socially distance from?
Yeah.
I would immediately select for anyone with dogs for my shortlist.
But haven't they got to have the dogs with them for it to be of any use?
Yeah, yeah. Let's just say
all
the dogs
are there.
So I'd immediately discard anyone without a dog.
You want to socially isolate with the dogs rather than the human, basically, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But Matt, do you have an answer while I mentally sift through tennis players with dogs?
Diego Schwartzman's got dogs. I think he's a standout candidate.
He's got great dogs, hasn't he?
Speaks Spanish. Could practice a bit of the Spanish with him.
Yeah.
I reckon he got good Argentinian food.
Well, we have sort of unofficially dined with Diego Schwartzman, Matt.
We have.
We know that we share the same culinary tastes as Diego Schwartzman.
Indeed. So he's the leading contender. I should say that someone you wouldn't want to at the moment, and we obviously wish him better, is Bernard Tomic, because he's got coronavirus symptoms, and he's having to self-isolate. And also Yaroslava Shvedova is in isolation, not because she's showing symptoms, but because she was on a flight from Milan to Kazakhstan and someone on that had coronavirus. And she's in 14 days quarantine now. So it is affecting tennis players. Sorry, this is the light segment of the podcast.
Bring it back to Diego Schwartzman's dogs, who I've just looked up on Instagram and are excellent, like really, really excellent.
I think I'd quite like to go for social isolation with Andreja Petković because I think I'd just learn loads of stuff.
Good shout.
She seems really clever. And I think she'd give me some really good answers. I'd just be able to tell her all of Catherine's put downs and just say, come up with some answers for me.
I had once somebody, well, obviously dog, and somebody with whom I'd have the same taste in programming because we're going to need to watch films back to back. Yesterday I watched 3 films in one day.
Three.
Yeah.
One of them which brought back a few memories for me from the 90s.
I watched 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah. That's the haircut I had, folks.
David used to go to the hairdresser and just say, I'll have a Hugh Grant, please.
Yeah. My mother.
I can't believe they didn't say, because I went through a phase where I went to the hairdresser and said, I'll have a Rachel, please. And I remember the hairdresser vividly saying, no, that won't work on you. That's not for you.
I think nobody really wanted to break it to me, I don't think. But my mother doesn't shy away from doing so. If anybody ever visits her house and looks around the living room and sees the picture of my graduation where I've got the hair, she has to comment upon it. Even if they're not even making an issue out of it, she draws attention to it and said, I can't believe you had that haircut.
Is she happy for that? Are you happy for that photo to appear on Instagram? Because that sounds like
you don't know how desperate we are for content, David. Right now, David. You've set yourself right up.
I don't think my wife is going to allow that.
Well,
to be out in the universe, the wider universe. That's for social isolation purposes only.
I think I might have something in my archive, Matt. We'll get onto it.
Surely, yeah. WhatsApp at least.
Yeah.
I don't know who I want a social distance from. I don't feel that strongly about
it. Well, Bernard Tomic.
Well, all right, yeah. I'm trying to think who really annoys me on the tennis tour.
Oh.
Can't think of too many players that
want I can,
that
I just
much.
Can't say it.
Okay. Oh, we'll get it out of her later when we've had a few more drinks. It's all a bit depressing, isn't it, really? The old coronavirus. And
the old coronavirus, yeah.
Yeah, but we aren't going anywhere as a tennis podcast. We are going to be sitting in these very seats for many more weeks to come. We are going to be taking your questions. We've still got our listener questions special that we recorded about 3 weeks ago when the world was normal. I'm slightly concerned about the tone of it because it sounds so jolly and normal. We might have to listen back to that to make sure it's appropriate. But no, they're all good tennis talking points. And
there's still a place for jolliness in this world, David.
Absolutely.
Don't deprive people of jolliness.
No, and tennis is going to be back, folks. It will be back. We just don't know when.
Sorry, I hadn't appreciated how much structure to my day tennis provides.
Yeah,
like it's not even the watching of the tennis necessarily that I'm missing. I obviously am, but it's all the other stuff that comes with it. Just following it, knowing that it's coming up in the afternoon, waking up to it. Following a week's worth of stories, now it's just emptiness.
Yeah. It is. I mean, I know, like in the scheme of the challenges that people are facing, this is absolute small fry.
Oh, sure,
that goes without saying. But I mean, the absence of sport is emotionally incredibly hard. Incredibly hard, and it brings me back. There have been a number of incredibly eloquent articles this week along these lines. Jonathan Liu, in particular, in The Guardian, and Tom Fordyce did one on the BBC Sport website, but which express kind of what I've always tried to say. Obviously, they've done it far better than I've ever been able to, about the place of sport in all our lives and this kind of reflex whenever anything bad happens of, oh, you know, sport's inconsequential, sport's not important. Well, it kind of is, you know, because it brings an awful lot of happiness and an awful lot of meaning and structure and joy and despair and passion and emotion to people's lives. And those things matter. The results, who wins and loses, might not matter, but the existence of sport in our lives matters, and the absence of it is being felt. And it's okay to feel it. It doesn't mean that you don't understand that there are more important things going on and more important things being missed and more important things at stake. It is okay to miss sport and for that to be a hole in your life, because it is in all of ours.
My son tonight, when I made him dinner, whenever my kids have dinner, they're always allowed. If the sport on, they're allowed to have the iPad out. I let them use my iPad to just watch whatever live sport is on, because I think that's okay.
And is that why you never have enough Wi-Fi to successfully record this podcast?
Correct, yes. And that's why, right at the moment, everything's fine, because nothing's on. They sat down and my son, who's 8 years old, said to me, "Oh, is there any football on, Dad?" And I said, "No, son."
Oh, no, that's broken my heart.
And my daughter said, "Is there any tennis on?" And I said, no, there's no tennis on. And it did sort of hit me that there's no sport on. And I know in this grand scheme of things, we know all the things that people say, that it's not that big a deal, and it's not. Not compared to people being dying and the going bankrupt or whatever might happen over the next few months. But it is a massive hole in people's lives. There's no question. And we need that glorious distraction. And as you put it, Matt, a kind of framework to your lives to just, I don't know, it just helps you through, doesn't it? It gives you a reason to be in so many ways. And yeah, they do that too. But we need it back. We need it back. And it will
dogs
be
do
back,
that as well,
folks. And actually,
that's why I'm going with Diego.
We had a lovely note today from a chap called Danny Rogers on Twitter, who said to us, "I applaud your decision to keep going with the tennis podcast if you can. Although there's no tennis, you have an engaged audience that have affection for you as a team." Isn't that nice? He said, "People stuck at home need some connection more than ever." And I mean, I hope that's true for a number of people, that just us doing this is some sort of help. It's good. It's help for us. I have to say, you probably guessed, we enjoy each other's company and talking and chatting about tennis. We love the sport. We enjoy each other's company, and we enjoyed a good old round, a good old laugh. And if you're listening and enjoying it with us, then That's good enough for us. Well, we promised we would keep going at the start of the year, and we don't intend to stop now. But those were really nice words, weren't they?
Yeah, and I don't mean to, you know, big up our pots or anything. I know in the scheme of things, there's not much we can do. But if we can provide any sense of continuity and levity in people's lives, then I feel very proud to do that. And it's not a selfless act, because this podcast provides exactly the same for me. I need to do this as much as we want to be able to do it for you. So it's a two-way street, or a three-way street, or whatever. Four-way street. There's three of us and one channel. Someone bail me out.
Somebody's listening. They're the fourth way. have we got any shout-outs, Matt?
Yes, we do.
Do you know, I've been in a queue to get onto the Ocado website for the entire duration of this podcast, and I'm still in a queue.
Oh, I thought that was going to be the moment you were in.
No, it still says we're experiencing a high volume of orders.
This is online supermarket shopping, isn't it?
I've got an order booked, apparently. So I booked this order about a week ago. Apparently, I could sell this delivery slot on the black market for several hundred pounds.
Yeah. Me. What is going on in the world?
Yeah.
Yeah. Having spent most of the last week laughing and generally mocking the situation of people stockpiling toilet roll, I ended up in a situation where there was no toilet roll left and couldn't find any in the shops, went on Amazon, and all that was available on Amazon was Boris Johnson toilet roll for $9.99 per roll.
Does it have his face on it?
It has his face on it, yeah.
Incredibly poetic. Please buy it.
Well, I then looked a bit harder in the shops and tracked down a shop with some. But yes, that was an unfortunate experience.
Okay. So, have we got these shout-outs or what?
Sorry, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I'm still not in.
Yeah, we've gone from shout-outs to toilet paper. So, shout-outs to Stephen Molloy.
Good on you, Stephen.
Hey, Stephen.
To Alan Chalmers.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, Alan.
And Anna Frenzel.
Hi, Anna.
Thank you all very much.
Yeah, thank
you. All legends.
All of you. Stick with us.
Brilliant. Especially at a time like this. Thank you for backing the Tennis Podcast. We're going to keep coming your way on a weekly basis. Different ideas thrown around, we're going to have a meeting after this when I get my next beer. We're going to get our editor to get cracking on editing this one while we have a chat about what we're going to do next week.
David sent a preliminary ideas email, folks. It's got us quaking in our boots.
Hooray. Excellent.
Yeah.
All of my ideas are going to be shot down in a matter of minutes.
No, they're not. I mean, yes, they are. No, I'm. Anyway. We're with you all the way. We are. We need this podcast as much as hopefully you need us. So we're there for you.
We are. So thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, look after, and this sounds so cliched and awful.
Go full Partridge, David, do it.
But I mean, I mean
come
it.
Come full circle.
I really mean it. I just want everybody to be nice to each other. Just be nice to each other. What can I say?
Jack and Akinori.
Take care, and we'll speak to you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.